Good afternoon. I said that without looking at my watch. You know, it's wonderful when the sermonette and sermon just run together. They exactly the same ideas. Oh, that's right, there was no sermonette. That means there'd be no ideas in the sermon. Before I begin, though, on a little bit more of a serious note, I would like to read the Good News Commentary from June the 26th, written by Mr. Kylo. It's on the subject of Michael Jackson's funeral. Now, the funeral hasn't taken place, in case anyone think they missed it. But Mr. Kylo says, having preached a lot of funeral services in my time as a minister, I couldn't help but think this morning, the day after Michael Jackson died, what would I say if I were to conduct his funeral? Funerals are really for the benefit of the living, and I have no interest in rehearsing all of the facts that had been exhaustively dissected by reporters. No, the real benefit is what can we, the living, learn? In watching all the news coverage, what struck me more than anything else were the descriptions of one particular aspect of his life, his childhood. Behind the bright, shiny face of the little kid leading vocals of the Jackson 5, real life did not evoke many smiles. Fame doesn't come cheaply, and one high price of fame for Michael Jackson was a missed childhood. It's not just that he was abused, but he missed out on a critical part of life. In one interview, he reflected on the childhood of being privately tutored for 3 hours a day, then going to the studio to record. He said he used to look out the window upon a parking lot filled with children playing, and he would cry, wishing he could just go out and play with the other kids. Jesus Christ once said, "What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul?" Michael Jackson lost out on the soul of childhood. Carefree playing, going to school, swimming in the summer in the country, ponds or city pools, learning the social skills that would come from little league baseball, and going to your first school dance. The normal stuff of childhood is a critically important part of having a normal adulthood. He as much as admitted so in his autobiographical song, Childhood. When you see interview clips of friends, acquaintances, and even Michael himself stating that so much of his adulthood was lonely and sad, you have to ask, how much of that sadness and even suspicion of his controversial adult behaviors is traceable back to his missed childhood? What would I say at Michael Jackson's funeral? One thing would be to urge the living not to let slip by this lesson of the value of life. Protect the children of the next generation, especially your own children. And I thought it was very appropriate the last two songs that Mr. Diggins led were about childhood and children. I wasn't a big fan of Michael's music, but I always liked his song, Heal the World. It was introduced by a child speaking these words. Think about the generations and say we want to make it a better world for our children and our children's children, so that they know it's a better world for them and think if they can make it a better place. I suggest that one of the greatest memories we should carry of Michael Jackson is not the legacy of his music, or his money, or his fame, but the lesson for the rest of us to give our children what he never had, a healthy, safe, loving, normal childhood. For Good News Magazine, I'm Clyde Kylo. I thought it was an excellent treatise on Michael Jackson. I had planned to mention a few things, but I can't improve on that. I do, just to mention that he was an integral part of my children's growing up for two generations, from the first generation of Alicia and Bill, I'm sorry, Tira and Bill, and Alicia. And even though they know that he'll be resurrected, it was really difficult for them. On next Sabbath, it's the 4th of July, the celebration of the birthday of the United States of America. What a nation. How mightily we have been blessed. We know that the United States is actually a direct descendant from Israel, and consequently, the recipient of the marvelous blessing that God promised to him. But is the United States thankful? Do they even recognize the blessing? Do they know that they should be thankful? How do they live? With all these blessings, with all that God has given them, how does this nation live? Well, before I go on with my SPS, this is a message that you would probably hear sometime approaching the Feast of Tabernacles, or maybe even during the Feast of Tabernacles. It's going to be a festival type message. But, you know, we've had so many problems. We're constantly working on our lives. We're constantly trying to become more like our Father and Jesus Christ. But brethren, we're not the only people in the world. And we have lost family members and friends that are not a part of our fellowship, of our foundation, of our family, at least not now. So I want to give a little encouragement. I want us to remember, nothing new, but I want us to remember that this is not the only time that they're going to live. There's going to be a better life for them. There's going to be a better life for us. And as we go through some of the things that I'm going to mention to you, some of them are quite disturbing. But remember, at the end of all that I say, at the end of the way we live today, is a better life for all. A better life for all. In the book of 2 Timothy, we read what seems to be in many ways a description of the way we live in this country. But we also know very much in the future that it will be quite differently. So let's turn to 2 Timothy, the 3rd chapter. And we're going to start reading in verse 1. It says, "But know this, in the last days perilous times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God." This afternoon I'm going to take several of these qualities, and I'm going to examine them as to how they're manifested today, and I'm also going to take a look forward as to how we will live in a different way tomorrow, in that, or how they will live, rather, in a different way tomorrow regarding that same quality. I started with first unloving. Unloving. That truly is a perfect description of how most of us see the world and how most of the world, most of this country lives. The evidence. Despite the knowledge, despite increased police effort, murder rates are racing out of control. They're simply growing. There seems to be no way to stop them. Whatever efforts, blue lights, spinning lights, police patrols, doesn't seem to be working. Revenge. If you kill one of mine, I'm going to kill one of yours. Doesn't matter that it's going to affect parents, sisters, brothers. I may kill them too. But murder rates are literally racing out of control. Even greater than that, physical assaults. I tell you, one of the most difficult things that our children and our community's children have to deal with is the gang violence. Because they may simply pick someone and say, I want them to be in my gang. And they will approach them. And if the answer is no, then they simply will beat them, in some cases, to death. They may pick a weak person or a person that they see as weak and say, this person is weak. This is the survival of the fittest. We're going to beat them. You may be at a party and someone steps on your shoes, dances with your girlfriend, tries to leave before you, spills a drink on you, or what? A myriad of things. And when I was growing up, that didn't happen that often. But when it did, a fist fight ensued. Now, a gunfight ensues. But brethren, it can't even limit itself to outside your home. It actually goes inside your home. I have some good news. Slightly good news. The divorce rate in this country is down. It's lower than it's been in over a decade. So fewer people are getting divorces, and that's wonderful. However, in 2007, even with that trend downward, there were over 1 million divorces. 1 million divorces, and all the trappings that go with it. What to do with the children, what to do with the assets. We hate each other. That's the people that actually went through the trouble to get divorced. There are others, we don't know what the count is, who left. They just left. They just split up. Why go through the legal papers? Why pay the money? We'll just separate and not be married. But then there are those who say, we're going to stick it out. It's a miserable, awful situation, but we're going to stick it out. And then there are those who are the result of spousal abuse. The husbands beat the wives. The wives beat the husband. They both beat the kids. It's a horrible, horrible situation. There simply is no love. No love. According to the U.S. Census, again from 2007, these numbers just blow your mind. There are 13.6 million single parents raising children in this country. 13.6 million single parents raising 21.2 million children. Now, I admit that all of those are not a result of lack of love. There are other circumstances. There may be the death of a spouse, any number of things. But the vast majority have to be simply two people got together, produced a child, and decided this is not working. So 1 and 8% of them are males, by the way. It's only 8%. The other 92% are females. But they just decided to go their own way. There was simply no love. And I could go on, but that's a general picture of how Manasseh, how a direct descendant of Israel, how a nation that is being blessed by God, a nation that is the most prosperous nation on the earth, that's how they're choosing to live. That's how they're choosing to live. Let's turn to Zechariah 10, and let's look forward, because I'm depressed already. Zechariah 10. And we'll start reading in verse 6. As soon as I get to Zechariah 10. It says, I will strengthen the house of Judah, and I will save the house of Jacob, and I will bring them back, because I have mercy on them. They shall be as though I had not cast them aside, for I am the Lord their God, and I will hear them. Those of Ephraim shall be like a mighty man, and the heart shall rejoice with wine. Yes, their children shall see it and be glad. Their heart shall rejoice in the Lord. I will whistle for them and gather them, and I will redeem them, and they shall increase as they once did. I will sow them among the peoples, and they shall remember me in far, far countries. And they shall live together with their children. They shall live together with their children. And they shall return. Turn to Isaiah 35. That's a time when families shall love each other. They shall stay together. And they shall do it because it's God's will. Isaiah 35, verse 8. It says, a highway shall be there and a road, and it shall be called the highway of holiness. And the unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for others. Whoever walks the road, although a fool, shall not go astray. No lion shall be there, nor shall any ravenous beast go upon it. It shall not be found there. But the redeemed shall walk there, and the ransom of the Lord shall return, and come to Zion with singing, with everlasting joy. And they shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. They will experience joy and gladness. They will experience love. They will experience love. They will not be an unloving people. Turn back to Isaiah 2. We'll be coming back here a number of times, but Isaiah 2, and we're going to read verses 2 to 4. It says, "Now it shall come to pass that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and nations shall flow to it. Many people shall come and say, 'Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of Jacob. He will teach us his ways.'" His ways, the ways of love. "And we will walk in his paths." We will walk in the way of love. "For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem." And let's go back to the book of John. John, the 15th chapter. Because Jesus Christ told us what God's way was, what his paths are. We don't have to wonder. John 15, we'll start reading in verse 9. "As the Father loved me, I also have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken, that my joy may remain in you." He spoke them so that we would know, they would know, that their way, their life was a life of love. "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you, if you follow this way of life, if you follow this path of love." So, point number one, unloving. This nation, one of the characteristics of this nation is that they are an unloving nation. Number two, point number two, lovers of money. Lovers of money. Now, God sent Micah and many other prophets to warn the nation about this tragedy. Let's look at some of those warnings. Let's go to Micah, the second chapter. Verse 1 and 2 says, "Woe to those who devise iniquity and work out evil in their beds. They lay in bed and they think about, 'What can I do next? What other evil plan can I hatch?' At morning light, they practice it." So they thought about it, and now it's morning. Let's put it into action. "Because it is in the power of their hand. They covet fields and they take them by violence. Also houses, and seize them. So they oppress a man and his home, a man and his inheritance." It says, verse 3 says, "Therefore, thus says the Lord, behold, against this family that does these things, I, God, am devising disaster." Now, I don't want God devising disaster against me, because he has the power to make it quite uncomfortable. Not to mention grinding me to dust without even thinking about it. Let's go to Micah 7. I'm sorry. We're going there, but let's go back first to Micah 2, and we're going to read verse 7 to 9. You who are named the house of Jacob, is the Spirit of the Lord restricted? Are these my doings? Do not my words do good to him who walks uprightly? Lately my people have risen up as an enemy. You pull off the robe with the garment from those who trust you as they pass by. You literally rip the clothes off their body. That's how you treat them, because you have the power to do it. Like men returned from war, the women of my people you cast out from pleasant houses, from their children. You have taken away my glory forever. Let's go to chapter 3. And we're going to start reading in verse 9. It says, now hear this, you heads of the house of Jacob and rulers of the house of Israel, who abhor justice and pervert all equity, who build up Zion with bloodshed and Jerusalem with iniquity, her head judge for a bribe, her priests teach for pay, and her prophets divine for money. Yet they lean on the Lord and say, is not the Lord among us? No harm can come upon us. Therefore, because of you, Zion shall be plowed like a field, Jerusalem shall become heaps of ruins, and the mountain of the temple like the bare hills of the forest. He hated their love for money. He hated the fact that they took advantage. God hates the fact that they took advantage of others to get money. You know, Mr. Jackson talked about this economic downturn. People are desperate. People are desperate. And we tend to even want to say, well, I can kind of understand this. But robberies are up tremendously. Breaking in the houses. I had a personal example. My son-in-law's car is parked in his driveway. His car is up to the door. They live in a wide open community. But sometime during the course of the night, they came and stole everything that was loose. Any electronics, anything that they could carry, including some of the kids' toys. They simply stole them. The other night, my mother-in-law feels that she heard someone trying to break into her house. So it touches all of us. It touches all of us. The love of money. Now, it's desperation. But it's desperation for what? We have people, and let's pray that we're not one of them, but if we are, let's repent. But we have people who falsify their tax return so they can get more money. We have people file false insurance claims so they can get more money. Brethren, God doesn't want that. But that is how this nation, direct descendant of Israel, the most blessed nation on the face of the earth, that is how they conduct their very lives. But now I'm going to tell you about the big bucks. That's just chump change, so to speak. I'm going to tell you about the big bucks. In 1987, the top 1% of wage earners in this country for that 1 year, for this 1 year. I'm not talking about their worth. I'm talking about what they owned in this 1 year. In 1987, the top 1% of wage earners earned 9% of all the wages paid. So the top 1% earned 9% of all that was made. I have a little bit of a problem with that, but not a lot. But then we went into the bonuses, all the different kickbacks, and this is just the money that's on the books, mind you, this next figure. I don't know what's off the books. I don't know what they've gotten through other means. But in 2007, just before the crash, at least we wonder what may be part of the cause of the crash, the top 1% of the wage earners for the year 2007 earned 21% of all the money that was earned. Think about that. The top 1% earned 21%. Doing some rough figures, that means the top 1% earned $2 billion. They weren't worth $2 billion. They earned $2 billion, and they earned it in that year. Now, they had earned money the year before and the year before, and they would earn money the year after. But for that 1 year, where did they get it? Where did the money come from? They told the unions they couldn't afford to pay them any more money. They told the cleaning staff, we got to lay people off. They took the people who needed the money most. They told the regular workers, whether it be retail or factory or whatever, and said, we can't afford to give any raises because we're in bad times. So they stayed still, but they went from 9% to 21% of all the income that was raised. That's how we're living. That's how this nation, the nation of Israel, the recipients of all the promises, that's how they're living today. And God has said, and I don't have the scripture, he said, when I take my revenge on the poor who have taken advantage of the rich, Hugh Buchanan gave this sermon once. He said, it's going to be like a horse with fire coming from my nose as I snort from my nose, because that's how angry I'm going to be. But brethren, it's not always going to be like that. Let's turn back to Micah. Well, actually, we're actually in Micah. Micah 4. And let's start reading in verse 1. Well, no, we're going to come back to verse 1. Let's start reading for this time in verse 4. You know, when we read this, if we look at verse 3, it talks about God rebuking strong nations from afar. And then we read this, and I have tended to read it as, because God rebuked those nations from afar, verse 4 through 8 is going to take place. But when you go through Micah 3, it's talking about how the rich are exploiting the poor. So I just believe that this is part of the reason that this is going to take place. Micah 4 verse 4 says, but everyone shall sit under his vine and under his fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. They're not going to worry that someone's going to come and steal it. Someone's going to come and bilk them out of it. Someone's going to take it. And no one shall make them afraid, for the mouth of the Lord of hosts has spoken. For all people walk each in the name of his God, but we will walk in the name of the Lord our God forever and ever. In that day, says the Lord, I will assemble the lame, I will gather the outcasts, and all those whom I have afflicted, I will make the lame a remnant, and the outcasts a strong nation. So the Lord will reign over them in Mount Zion, from now on, even forever. And you, O tower of the flock, the strong of the daughter of Zion, to you it shall come, even the former dominion shall come, the kingdom of the daughter of Jerusalem. In the kingdom, we aren't going to have borrowing. We aren't going to have foreclosures. We aren't going to have people buying low and selling high. We aren't going to have people taking advantage of those who have little or no power. Everyone, not just the rich, not just the poor, but everyone shall sit under his vine and under his fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. My next point is boasters. Boasters. Now, actually, I'm taking a little bit of a different tack with this because I'm going to talk about people boasting against this nation. The president, premier, king, whatever his title is, of North Korea is busily trying to launch a broken down rocket all the way across the ocean just so it could fall on the shores of Hawaii. Not to do any good, but just to prove he can do it. He is saying every day, if you try to stop me, I'm going to consider it an act of war, and it's just going to be bad. We respond by saying, if you go against something in our interest, we're going to hit you back, and we're going to hit you hard, and it's going to be bad. We boast. Boasting doesn't just happen in the government. It happens I work for Home Depot. We have our meetings. The guy says, we're going to sell Lowe's of plywood to board up their stores. We're going to put them out of business. Why? There's business for everybody. There's business for everybody. We boast about so many things. I've got the number one baseball team. I've got the number one basketball team. My team's better than your team, et cetera, et cetera. And as long as it's lighthearted, fine. But boasting leads to contention. It leads to conflict. But we live in a nation of boasting. So again, let's look ahead. Let's stay with Micah. So go to Micah 4. We're going to start reading in verse 1 this time. So now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountains of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted all the hills, and people shall flow to it. Many nations shall come and say, let us come and go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, and we shall walk in his paths. For out of Zion out of Zion, not from boasting. Out of Zion, the law shall go forth, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And that word will be my might, my power. Go over to Micah 7 again. Okay, let's go read verse 7 to 9. I don't think this is what I want, but I'll read it anyway. Therefore, I will look to the Lord. I will wait for the Lord, for the God of my salvation, and my God will hear me. I won't boast on my own, of my own. I will look to God. Do not rejoice over me, my enemy. When I fall, I will arise. When I sit in darkness, the Lord will be a light to me. I will bear the indignation of the Lord because I have sinned against him. Until he pleads my case and executes justice for me, he will bring me forth to the light, and I will see his righteousness. Let's go Micah 7, and let's read verse 15. Okay, so reading verse 15. As in the days when you came out of the land of Egypt, I will show them marvelous things. He is going to show the nations marvelous things. And this is what they're going to do. The nations shall see and be ashamed of their might, be ashamed of their boasting. And they shall put their hand over their mouth. They will not boast anymore. Their ears shall be deaf. They shall lick the dust like a serpent. They shall crawl from their holes like snakes of the earth. They shall be afraid of the Lord our God and shall fear because of you. Who is a God like you, pardoning iniquity and passing over the transgressions of the remnant of his heritage, the remnant of Jacob? He does not retain his anger forever, because he delights in mercy. And he will again have compassion on us and will subdue our iniquities. You will cast all our sins into the depths of the sea. You will give truth to Jacob and mercy to Abraham, which you have sworn to our fathers from days of old. To us, the remnant, we're going to see God do miraculous things, and we're going to put our hands over our mouths, and we're not going to be boasting anymore. Instead, we're going to be afraid and we're going to depend on God. This is how this nation in the kingdom is going to live, not boasting as we do today. Number four. Lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. Lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. I'm about to get really depressed now. Let's turn to Romans 1. Verse And we're going to start reading in verse 21. Lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. One requirement there is that you have to know God. You have to have known God to choose. Because it seems that it's saying that you're choosing to love pleasure more than you love God. You're not falling into it. You're choosing that way. Verse 21 says, because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Idols. They started worshiping idols. Well, I don't see anybody with birds. And I've been to a lot of people's houses. I've never seen anybody with birds and statues. I did see this one guy have some statues, but that's another story. That they actually bent down and worship. But I did see him out spit shining his red convertible. I did see him pulling out the finest china to impress. Watching their 80-inch big screen TV. You could have one of those, by the way. That's not wrong to have. It's wrong to worship it. It's wrong to say, this is the thing that I want to spend the most time with. And that includes your grandchildren. You can have any kind of idol, and you have to be careful. Verse 24 says, therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness and the lust of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God. They made a decision. They exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worship and serve the creature rather than the Creator who is blessed forever. For this reason, God gave them up to vile passions. For even their women exchange the natural use for what is against nature. Likewise, also the men, leaving the natural use of women, burned in their lust for one another. Men with men, committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error, which was due. I don't need to go into a lot of explanation. I can tell you that it's a huge cry, a huge hue and cry for equality among homosexuals. They want the same rights. And that's not enough. They want to be able to get married. They want to be able to adopt children. You know, I often will read in the paper. Well, I have one. I can't remember her name, but the comedian Wanda Sykes, and her wife have a new baby girl, and it's all over the news. It's such a wonderful thing. It's horrible. God gave them over to that. But God said, how was it described? Vile. Vile. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting. Being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness, they are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things. This is a computer. To me, it's an evil thing. I can't handle it. That's supposed to be a joke. Disobedient to parents. Undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful. The same list. Who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, they knew the righteous judgment of God in this country. It's preached in the churches on the wrong day, almost every week in some form. It's on TV. It's on the internet. Knowing the righteous judgment of God, though that those that practice such things are worthy of death, not only to do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. Now let me explain it again. We know, they know, that what they're doing is against the righteous judgment of God. They know that those who practice such things are worthy of death. Some of them do the same. They do the same thing. But also, those that don't approve of those that do. Wrong. All the political parties are saying, well, we can put up with a certain amount of this. We can allow this, but we can't allow this. And they all move a little bit further. Well, they can live together, but they can't be married. Well, they can inherit each other's property, but, well, maybe they could get married in your state. I just don't have to recognize it in my state. And it just moves further and further. And more, the further they go, the more they approve. And approving of it is being given over to a base mind. Approving of those vile acts is being given over to a base mind. Now, brethren, that is surely a symptom of this nation, a direct descendant of the nation of Israel, the most highly blessed nation on the face of the earth. They know that God considers it worthy of death, but every day they pass more and more laws permitting it, more and more and more. That's the nation that we live in. That's the nation that we live in today. But there's going to be another set of laws. Let's turn to Isaiah 2. I've got to get rid of half this page or I'm going to be David Jackson. Isaiah 2, we'll start reading in verse 2. It says, "Now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and nations shall flow into it. Many people shall come and go and say, 'Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, and as a result, we will walk in his paths.'" Now, brethren, remember, this is not referring to us. This is referring to this nation, to people that we know, people that don't understand it, people that are not called. "He will teach us his ways, and we shall walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem." All right, let me go on to the next. Number five, unholy. Unholy. We can stay right where we are in Isaiah 2, verse 11. Because this is a description of what God feels is unholy. Verse 6 says, "For you have forsaken your people, the house of Jacob, because they are filled with eastern ways. They are soothsayers like the Philistine, and they are pleased with the children of foreigners. Their land is also full of silver and gold, and there is no end to their treasures. There is no end. Their land is also full of horses, and there is no end to their chariots. Their land is also full of idols, and they worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made." Goes back to what I was saying before. Idols. What are our idols? What are our idols? Michael Jackson was probably an idol. A number of rock stars. There are people that travel all around the world following groups. They just simply go from place to place hoping to get to meet and enjoy the company of their idol. Food. There's some people who love, for me, chocolate cake. But some people love a certain food. And I'm telling you, it's probably the hardest part of fasting, if they fast, is to not have that food. And some days they may just say, you know, God understands. Things. What do you spend your money on? What do you spend your time on? This nation actually wants to take all flags, all religious symbols out of all of the office government buildings, because they want to forget God. They want to say, the government can save me. We want higher taxes. We want lower taxes. We want more military. We want less military. We want whatever we want. We can get it from the government. We can get it from the government. Because we don't trust in God, but we trust in nuclear weapons. We don't trust in God, but we trust in the $1 trillion that the government can print to get us out of our situation. Those are idols. Those are idols. And that's what makes this nation run. The rich men who get $300, $400, $500 million bonuses, not to mention bailouts, our company was so disgusted with Bob Nardelli, they gave him $240 million and said, please go. They tell the people, oh, we can only afford a 25-cent raise this year because, things are tight. We had to pay all that money to Bob Nardelli. So Bob Nardelli gets $240 million, and this poor lady, who's a single mom trying to raise her kid, gets a 25-cent raise, which works out to $10 a week, which works out to $40 a month. I mean, that's before taxes. But that money isn't idle. And look at the fur, the upset when they said we got to cut these bonuses. It was horrible. And some leading economists, I watch this money show from time to time, said, don't think that they've given up this money. They've just found a back door for it to come in. That's the only reason they were able to calm down, because they found a back door, a way to get this money in through the back door. And they're doing it through paying your politicians. The politicians want the money. They want the more money. That's our nation. That's our nation. Turn to Malachi. We ran out of the white pages this time. Malachi 2. I'm sorry, Malachi 1. Unholy. We're going to read verse 6. A son honors his father, and a servant his master. If then I am the father, where is my honor? And if I am a master, where is my reverence? Says the Lord of hosts. To you priests who despise my name, yet you say, in what way have we despised your name? Well, how does this nation honor God? Where is God's honor? Where is his thanks for making us the nation that we are? For his blessings? We're unholy. We're unholy and trying to get more so. Trying to get more so. It's not always going to be that way, though. It's not always going to be that way. I'll just read Isaiah 4, verse 3. You don't have to turn there. It says, and it shall come to pass that he who is left in Zion, and he who remains in Jerusalem will be called holy, and everyone who is recorded among the living in Jerusalem. So there's going to be a holy people. A holy people. Let's turn to Romans. Romans, the 8th chapter. As we said, as I've read before in Micah and in Isaiah, they're going to go to the mountain of the Lord. The people are going to go up to the mountain of the Lord, and he's going to teach them his ways, and he's going to follow their paths. He's going to follow their paths. And when he does that, they're going to be led by the Spirit. So Romans 8, verse 14. It says, for as many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God. And if you are the sons of God, you're truly not unholy, but rather you're holy. And let's skip ahead to verse 19. And let's skip that. Let's go to 1 John 3. First John 3, we're going to read verses 1 and 2. Refers to us now, it will refer to them in the kingdom. Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed on us, that we should be called the children of God. Therefore, the world does not know us, but it did not know him. Beloved, we are the children of God, and it has not yet been revealed what we shall be, but we know that when he is revealed, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. We will be holy. They will eventually be holy. And this will not be any longer an unholy society. I'm going to start to close now because we're running short on time. I'm going to close by reading two different outcomes. Two different outcomes. If we live one way, we'll have one outcome. And if we live a different way in the future, there'll be a different outcome. So let's start reading. Let's go to Isaiah 24. This is the direction on which this nation is heading now. Isaiah 24, start reading in verse 1. It says, behold, the Lord makes the earth empty and makes it waste, distorts its surface, and scatters abroad its inhabitants. And it shall be, as with the people, so with the priest. The priest and the people are going to suffer the same outcome. As with the servant, so with the master. The poor who steal little bits from the rich, and the rich who steal gargantuan amounts from the poor. There's nothing wrong with being well off. As a matter of fact, Abram was well off. Solomon, the richest man ever. When Job lost all of his crops, children, family, he was extremely wealthy. It was all taken away from him, but you know what? It was all given back to him. His problem wasn't being wealthy. So there's nothing wrong with being wealthy. It's worshiping that wealth and gaining it in the wrong way. That's the problem. And that's how this nation does it. As with the maid, so her mistress. As with the buyer, so with the seller. As with the lender, so with the borrower. The borrower who borrows knows he's not qualified to borrow. The lender who lends knows that he can grab a quick cash fix and cash out. As with the creditor, so with the debtor, the land shall be utterly emptied and utterly plundered. For the Lord has spoken his word. The earth mourns and fades away. The world languishes and fades away. The haughty people of the earth languish. The earth is also defiled under its inhabitants because they have transgressed the laws, changed the ordinances, broken the everlasting covenant. That's where this nation is headed if they continue to live the way that they're living. If they continue going in that direction. And frankly, I don't see God, with God, everything is possible. But I don't see anything that's going to be big enough to cause them to change. And I don't see anything in here that tells me that prior to the return of Jesus Christ, they're going to return. I mean, they're going to change. But then how about, let's end it on a little good news. Let's turn to Isaiah 35. Isaiah 35, and I'm going to read the whole chapter. The wilderness and the wasteland shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. And it shall blossom abundantly and rejoice, even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given to it, the excellence of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord, the excellency of our God. Strengthen the weak hands, those that are weak, and make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who are fearful hearted, be strong, do not fear. Behold, your God will come with vengeance. With the recompense of God, he will come and he will save you. He will save you. And then marvelous things will happen. The eyes of the blind shall be opened. The ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. The lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the dumb sing. For water shall burst forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. The parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water in the habitation of jackals where each lay. And there shall be grass with reeds and rushes. Beautiful, beautiful surroundings. Beautiful surroundings. And a highway shall be there, and a road, and it shall be called the Highway of Holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for others. Whoever walks the road, although a fool, shall not go astray. No lion shall be there, nor any ravenous beast go up in it. It shall not be found there, but the redeemed shall walk there. And the ransom of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with singing, with everlasting joy on their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. That is the history, or that is the outcome for God's people. So brethren, this coming Sabbath, July 4th, is the anniversary of the birth of this great nation. It is a great nation. Not because of anything that the people in it have done, but because it's a gift from God. It's a blessing. It is a blessing. God has blessed this nation mightily, but this nation continues to live in a way that is unacceptable to him. But the future is coming. Jesus Christ is going to return. We're going to have a kingdom. It's going to be a wonderful, beautiful, serene, peaceful, joy, happy place. It's going to be fantastic. Fantastic. So as you deal with problems, as you deal with people at work who maybe you may feel are out to get you, as you feel with people, as you deal with people on your job or in your community, that you feel need help, that they need some encouragement. As you think about a family member who you may have had to bury, and you know that they did not know what we know God did not call them. As you think about those who are close to that point, who are sick and dying, just remember, this is not the only time. The life we're living, the life they're living, is but a probably not even microscopic portion of what time is. As this nation continues to live in the way that it does, just take comfort and solace in the fact that the kingdom is promised and it will be delivered.